following is a conversation in a series of podcasts discussing topics and issues dealing with high technology crime and digital evidence recovery. These podcasts are presented by Search, the National Consortium for Justice Information and Statistics. This series is made possible through funding from the Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance. Thank you for joining us in a discussion about advanced data extraction from mobile devices. I'm Elizabeth Tao, a high-tech crime training specialist at Search. Here to share his expertise on the subject is Detective Wade Higgison of the Livonia Police Department in Michigan. Before we get started, I'd like to have Wade introduce himself.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I'm Detective Wade Higgison with the Livonia Police Department. I've been assigned to the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force for the last 9 years. My assignment there has been for computer forensics and cell phone digital forensics, or digital examination of cell phone devices. I'm on the FBI Southeastern Michigan Crimes Against Children Task Force, doing the same function, performing forensics exams for them. So I've been with the department about 24 years, the last 9 doing forensics.
Thank you, Wade, and thank you for taking the time to visit with us today. The landscape for data extraction in cell phones is continuously changing. With all the different types, brands, and capabilities, there's not a typical investigation for cellular devices. Once a device is found to be part of an investigation, a determination of how the evidence will be extracted from the device needs to be made. Can you explain when and why an advanced data extraction is used?
Yes, we tend to do advanced extractions when we're trying to get the most information from the device that's possible. Every one of these devices has different types of information that they're able to share with you. Some phones, let's say your pay-as-you-go phones, are locked out so that they won't provide any information to a typical forensic exam. You would need to simply take pictures of the different screenshots as you're thumbing through the device to get information off of it. So it does depend on the device that we're looking at as to what information we possibly can obtain from the device. By doing an advanced extraction, you're actually throwing everything you have against it using different tools, because every tool now has its upsides and downsides as to what information they're able to get off the phone, how it shows it in a report, and even to the extent of what deleted information they can obtain. And deleted being still in the database and still on the device, but deleted to the user.
Is it necessary to do an advanced data extraction on every case?
No, it's not. There's quite a few times where all the investigator is looking for is the phone number for the device. It may have been dropped at a crime scene, and they simply just want to know, what's the phone number for the device so I can do a search warrant to the service provider to find out who owns the device so that they can develop a suspect for whatever crime it was that the phone was left behind at. There's other times where we have investigators say, I don't want anything off the phone, but let's just videos. I just want this particular video, actually, too. So we can have very targeted extractions where we're grabbing just a few things that they need for the case. We also get court orders to that extent. There'll be times where it's a victim's phone and she took some pictures of something of a crime, or he did, and the judge has said, you can get only these items off of the phone. And so in that case, we're really narrowing our scope down to just a few things. And then also times when you want to do a limited extraction, maybe your training dictates that you're not able to do an advanced extraction. Simply just know how to run a most basic exam on this device, and anything over that's beyond your technical expertise, and you would need to have someone else do it.
So based on that, is it usually a court ordered to get an advanced data extraction, or is it depending on the case?
It is somewhat depending on the case. Most of the court orders I get allow me to get anything off of the device. The court order itself will be very broad. It'll tell me that they want to get any and all information from the device, and it'll say including things like pictures and call records and text messages. They may lay out some examples of what they're looking for. Generally, our search warrants are very broad in scope when it comes to cell phones, because there's so much information that can be on there, and it comes down to the case officer in charge as to what information they end up deeming valuable for their investigation. We do very little analysis here. We tend to try and get everything off the phone we can and then turn it over to the case officer who knows the most about the case. And if he's reading a text message or if they're looking at a picture, he or she may realize that that's important to their case, whereas it wouldn't necessarily stick out to me as being something that's important to the case because I don't know all the details of the case.
Can you talk a little bit about the benefits and limitations to using advanced data extraction?
Sure. The advanced data extraction, it tends to take longer, and you get such a mass quantity of information that sometimes it can be overwhelming for the case investigators just to go through it. We've had reports that are 5, 10, 15,000 pages long because the device has been used for so long, and the amount of memory on these devices, especially smartphones, can be extensive, now up to, what, 128 gigabytes for the iPhone 6. So the amount of information that could potentially be there, especially when they take the old iPhones and they sync it with iTunes to get all their old music stuff on there, and they inadvertently pull their old text messages and stuff along with it. So you can get quite a long history of information from the device, and it takes a long time to go through it. And then the other reasons that maybe you wouldn't want to do an advanced, when you get into the advanced extractions, it takes longer for the examiner, which means they're tied up on the case. So if it's a real low-level case, I wouldn't say you'd want to have an advanced extraction done on driving while suspended, and they also want to write them a ticket for using their cell phone while they're driving. You need a full forensic exam on that versus maybe just something showing the call record shows that they were on the phone at the time of the traffic stop, or, you know, they disconnected a call right as the officer's pulling them over. That would just be a waste of resources to do that kind of an examination when you're looking for such a small little detail thing that would be covered in a basic extraction versus an advanced.
There are many tools available to law enforcement for the advanced data extraction. In your opinion, what tools are being used successfully, and why are certain tools used for certain situations?
Well, that a lot of times comes down to the experience of the forensic examiner. They've had different successes with different tools, or it could even be budget driven. Because it is so expensive to get all these different tools and have them in your lab up to date, sometimes labs only can afford certain tools. So they'll go with the one tool that tends to get most information that they're looking for. We've been very fortunate in our lab. We have most of the different tools that tend to be the popular ones. And then we'll find that tools change over time, that you may start out with one tool that tends to get everything that you like and you need for your cases. And then another tool passes it up for certain model phones, and you didn't realize it until you give it a try just to see how that tool's doing. And all of a sudden you've gotten, you know, 20, 30 different third-party apps that are being reported in the tool that you weren't getting with your other tool, and you didn't realize you were missing it. So we tend to run tests on a pretty frequent basis, you know, at least monthly, because updates tend to come out every month. And we'll run through different known phones we have in our library and see what it's getting now, maybe compared to what it was getting a month ago. We just recently had that experience where one of the tools, you know, Cellebrite, that we use quite a bit, we ran another tool called XRY against the same phone, and it ported a whole new app that we hadn't even realized was being used, and that's where all the evidence was. The prosecutor's case, that they were very excited that we were able to pull all that out, because they were going to use a camera to take pictures of the app, because none of the software would pull this app out of the phone. So you do have to get to know your tools. You do need to test them. It doesn't hurt to run the same phone on multiple tools just to see what the differences are. Even some ways the different tools will report messages and stuff to you. Cellebrite, for instance, will pull all the different text messages together and just give you a total count. Whereas I found with another tool like XRY, sometimes it'll pull in and it'll say fewer messages, but what it is they're actually individual conversations that might have 10 or 15 texts back and forth in it, and it's counting it as one conversation instead of one, you know, 15 conversations. So the numbers look different, but the total number of messages that you get are the same. So it can be deceiving that way if you don't know your tool. And then again, just trying different tools validates the other tools and make sure that they're all working correctly, and you get pleasant surprise once in a while when you find there's a new app that one supports that one of the others doesn't, especially if that app is important to your case.
How many different tools do you normally use per case or per phone? Do you have a set number that you use, or does it depend on the phone and the case you're working on?
That's a good question. It really does depend on the phone and the case we're working on as to what they're looking for. If it is like video driven and we can't get the video off the phone any other way, we may end up using a tool like ZRT to record the video, you know, manually, playing on the device itself. There are times in court that they like to, even though our tools correctly pulled all the text messages off the phone and all the stuff that we need for court, that they still like us to take a picture of the text message displayed on the screen on the phone for the jury, because the jury can wrap their head around, like, that's what it looks like when I'm looking at a text message on my phone versus I want you to look at line 23 on the Excel spreadsheet, and you'll notice there's a text message there. So sometimes just for court presentation, it's hard to beat a picture of what is actually displayed on the phone versus reports that your tools generate. Now, as far as a set number of tools, if I'm getting everything off the phone that I need and I can do it with one tool, that's preferred. The more reports you have, the more confusing it can be for both the prosecutor and the investigator on the case. And so we do try and limit the number of tools we use. But that being said, we still want to make sure we get the most information off the phone. So if it is an Android case, you know, the phone is an Android operating system, I have two, three tools that I like to use for Android phones and to check them against each other, make sure I'm getting all the information off of them. If it's an older phone, maybe not a smartphone, just a flip phone that is running like a Brew operating system, some of the more old school operating systems for cell phones. Then I have other tools that sometimes, even like a Cellebrite that tends to get everything from most of the phones out there, I have tools that will get more information from the phone, even these older phones, than the Cellebrite does. And Final Mobile is the tool I like for that situation. And you kind of learn this as you go over time, and different tools do different things for you. So I wouldn't say there's a set number of tools that we use per case. It's more the case tells us what tools we should probably try. You know, if you don't have success, and it does happen, there's so many different variations of operating systems for the phone. You know, Android, there can be any one of probably 5 or 6 recent versions of Android running, and sometimes it just hangs up. Maybe the phone's jailbroken, the iPhone world, and it won't run on a Cellebrite because it's the same process they use to go in and query the phone themselves. I've had that actually happen. And so I end up having to use another tool because it just won't work on the Cellebrite, even though the Cellebrite supports that phone. So it's nice to be able to have those options out there where you can go and try something else.
You just mentioned that sometimes you use different tools for different phones, Android versus iPhone versus maybe an older throwdown phone. Can you tell me just in your preference what you use for those maybe 3 different categories?
Sure. Well, we have a lot of good success with the Cellebrite, working it in both their, they have like an advanced extraction now where you run it on the computer with their physical analyzer software. You skip the UFED altogether, and that has been doing real well for us. XRY has come on strong recently, and their tool tends to get the same information, but sometimes just a little bit more. They seem to be temporarily ahead in the application game of what apps they support for parsing. And then what I found is with Final Mobile, if I take a Cellebrite file system dump and run Final Mobile against that dump, I end up carving out maybe some more apps that I didn't get. Final Mobile's done a real good job of displaying the information for me, sometimes a little more information, even for calls and stuff. For some reason, I've gotten different numbers, probably a little less stringent on their rules for parsing the deleted information, because sometimes some of the information I get isn't complete. It's partially overwritten, and so it reports that as a potential call or information, and it's really just a bunch of garbly gook. There's times where I do get a little bit more information doing that than what I got with the Cellebrite. And then we use Oxygen as well. It's another tool that's out there. We use Lantern quite a bit. It does well with both iPhones and Androids, and that's what it's limited to right now. Pleasantly, recently we've had some Windows phones, and usually all I could get with the new Windows phones was videos and pictures, but XRY suddenly has started to get some more information from such as call records and text messages and contacts. So that's nice that now we're starting to get some differences in the tools where we were having to manually extract all that from the phones before, take pictures of it.
Absolutely. With all the new apps and new angles that cell phone companies themselves are coming out with, it seems like it's a never-ending battle to keep up as far as the companies that are trying to get the information out of them.
That's true.
Can you talk to us a little bit about translated data versus untranslated data?
Yes, the translated data, you know, that's where the tool is pretty much doing everything for you. It's going through and grabbing all the information. You know, it's good to go in and check maybe in the SQLite databases or the plist files and just to make sure that the messages are showing up correctly. But most of these tools have been validated by the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST. They're really good tools for what they are. Nobody would be able to manually go in and list all the different text messages that are in a, you know, SQLite database. If they try to, it'd take days. You know, it's just there's so much information there, and to manually pull all that stuff out, we need some sort of automation to speed that up. Especially with the kids, you know, sending, 15,000, 20,000 text messages. You can't imagine how that would be to, you know, how Tiyu said, be to have to go in there and manually carve all that out yourself. And it does. It just takes time. And then when you have the untranslated data, sometimes I look at that as maybe an app that's not supported. Now you do have to go in and do some looking around yourself and seeing what you can pull out of the app. It's very time consuming. Generally, it's harder to do because you're not able to pull all the different pieces of maybe a call history or something together easily, because they might have it in different parts of the database. It's not like it's all just sitting there for you in plain text and easy for you to pull it out. You can have the call at one part. You could have the contact of who it was that called stored somewhere else. And meshing these things together can be kind of crazy. So, you know, between the translated and untranslated, obviously I'd rather deal in the translated world. Advantage, disadvantage, something like that, it really comes down to time. When you have to manually do anything, it's going to take so much longer, especially nowadays with these smartphones having so much information on them. They're literally mini computers that we wear on our hips.
Wade, as we look at other types of phones or maybe damaged phones, is there another step above the advanced data extraction that you can do to get information?
There actually is. There's two steps, one being a little less invasive than the other. We refer to J-tagging, which is actually reading the test strip or test points that are on a circuit board on the phone. And then there's the chip-off process where we actually physically remove chips from the circuit board and do so much damage doing so that it's not easily put back together, if put back together at all. No attempts usually made. It's kind of a destructive process. The problem, each have their advantages and disadvantages. J-tagging, you're taking a phone that, let's say maybe there's a password on it that you can't get past. Your Cellebrite doesn't support overriding that password or one of your other tools. So you end up trying to solder wires to the test points on the board and then use a tool such as RiffBox or ORT to pull that information off of that circuit board. Very slow. Typically with the ORT, they can pull about a gigabyte a day. With a typical Android Motorola phone, they can be 11 to 16 gigabytes. So just pulling information off of a 16 gigabyte Motorola phone could take 16 days. It would be in blocks, 1 gigabyte. And then you got to use another program to put those 16 gigs of blocks all back together as one piece so that you can put it into a tool such as Cellebrite or XRY to examine it, or even Final Mobile would look at that. Problem with that is because it's in chunks and it's picking up and letting off where it's at is they don't necessarily line up perfectly. They might overlap a little bit. They might actually be missing some data. Generally with something like that, we're just carving for the passcode to try and get it so we can go back in and use our tools on the phone the way it is. JTAG won't work on a phone that's been damaged, heavily damaged. The person snaps the phone in half, JTAG process wouldn't work at all because the circuit board needs to be working with a JTAG process to test. You're attaching test leads to the circuit board to test a working circuit board. So if the circuit board is damaged where it's not working any longer, JTAG's out the door, can't use it. And we actually had that experience with a homicide phone. The phone had been stomped on and left with the body after the person had killed him, and we couldn't do anything with JTAG. It was tried, two different labs tried. And it was because the phone was damaged so bad. But we were able to take the chip off the back of the phone, take and remove the chip and clean it up and actually read directly from the chip. And that process took, only a day to do. And we got everything off of the microprocessor chip, the memory chip, that we would have gotten in a normal exam. With the chip off, there's a lot of problems with it, too. It's very expensive. Just the class alone can be $5,000 without travel, airfare or anything. And then you have to get the equipment to read the chip. And I'm told that the high end of that is $100,000 for a reader. And the low end, which is what we're using in the class, is about $2,500. And then you still have to go out and buy the little adapter. It's like a plug-in adapter that you put the chip into, and each chip can be configured differently. And those adapters run anywhere between $400 or $500 all the way up to $1,000 for one chip. It can blow most departments' budgets just trying to have the right reader so you can even check what's on the chip. And that makes it extremely expensive to do. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police that were teaching the class, they told us that their readers were about $25,000 that they use. And they still have to go out and each of their inserts to be able to read a chip run somewhere around $1,000. If you get a different phone in and it has a different chip on it, then you end up having to send out and order the correct adapter to plug in. And this equipment is the same kind of equipment they're actually using in the factories to test the phones. That's why it's so expensive, is because we're using what the factories use to test to make sure that the chips are working correctly and the phones are working correctly. And even JTAG, for that matter, it's not necessarily cheap because you got to buy all the different, like the ORT box or the RIF box. They have different ones out there that people are trying. Same last time I looked, there's something like 7 or 8 different of these JTAG boxes that are out there, and each has different advantages for phones that they support. But trying to keep a collection of those together, and then finding the correct pinout on the back of the phone for whatever phone you have, can be an adventure. People are posting it sometimes online. There's different forensic websites that people will go to look for that information. But it can be problematic trying to figure out the correct pinout for the phone that you have, especially if it's a new phone. Maybe no one's done it yet. And so then you're just kind of guessing, trying to get it to work right, and it can be problematic. And then the chip-off process is so destructive, you're using heat to take the chip off of the motherboard, and then sometimes that heat process will actually take the markings right off the chip, so you better write that stuff down ahead of time before you use the process to remove the chip, or you may never get into the chip. You need to know what the chip number is in order to look it up and see what the correct adapter is for it. The software actually uses the chip number to interpret the data from the chip. If you don't have the chip number, it's not going to know how to read the chip for you. So there's a lot of considerations when you're getting into both JTAG and chip-off.
I know that you are trained to perform these extractions. Do you do this in-house?
We do them in-house. Some of the problems we're having right now, we're in the process of getting the reader that we want to use here in our lab, because it was real recent that I went to this class. We do have some little adapters. They're kind of interesting. They work in an SD card slot, and the base of the reader has all the circuitry to read the different chips. So it's just supporting the more popular chip. And then you put the chip into the little reader and slide it into your SD slot, and it reads directly. You can use FTK's imager to look right at the chip and read right from it without having to use a third-party tool. I was able to do that with a couple of chips in class, and I preferred that, but the problem is there's only like 7 of these Sarita adapters out there, and there's a lot more cell phones than 7. They use a lot more different types of chips than just 7. It's very limited what works, but if you do have the chip that one of these little Sarita readers works on, it's very nice. I mean, it'd be the preferable thing for me to have it that way for everything, because I'm very comfortable using my FTK imager to pull information off of a chip or a thumb drive or what have you, then use my computer forensic tools to look at the data. And if I put it into a flat file, I can run it against things like File Mobile will take a raw dump like that. Maybe if I just do it a raw image using an imager and then point my File Mobile tool at that, it'll parse out everything I need, just like it was looking at a dump from Cellebrite or a dump that it had made. So it was nice to be able to use tools I'm familiar with just a chip off, directly reading from the chip, not having to depend on a third-party tool, the reader, to sit in the middle and interpret everything for me. So it's kind of neat.
For those who don't have the ability and or training and knowledge to perform these types of extractions, do you have a suggestion where they can go, or are there options that they can take advantage of to be able to still have this technology to get information from their phone?
Yeah, the only advice I can offer on that, it's very limited right now. I'm imagining it's growing across the country. The Secret Service has been offering some training on J-tagging. They have not done anything with chip-off yet. There is some training available out there for people to get knowledge on how to do a J-tag. But most of the time, there's only a few people in each state that know how to do it. You can start with usually your bigger organizations, maybe even reach out to your federal partners, the FBI and Secret Service. And even maybe the Marshals Service, they tend to have access to that, or they'll know where to point you to get that kind of information if you have a case that rises that level. But that's kind of the problem we end up with, is it better be a very high profile, you know, need to have case because of the amount of money involved with doing these and the time. And there's so few of these people out there that do this stuff.
Which leads us right into our next topic, and one that I think is 100% relative to all agencies out there, and that's training. One of the challenges to law enforcement is the ability, both time and financial, to attend training. And unfortunately, to conduct advanced data extraction from the cellular devices, it's a fairly specialized process. Can you explain the type of training that needs to be attended to do these advanced data extractions?
That's a really good question. The problem we have here is there's so few classes out there for this. I attended the only class that I'm aware of that's out there for learning how to do the chip off, and that's why they probably get the amount of money they get for the class, because they're the sole source of training. And then when you do go to the training, you find out, you know, you save up enough money and you're able to do that, then you just have to go out and buy the equipment. And that's lacking. I see that even within my organizations, people will be sent to training, they'll learn how to do something, they'll come back and they're not able to perform what they've learned because there's no money in the budget for hardware, you know, for the actual software and hardware needed to do what you learned how to do. There's lots of grants for training. There's very few grants to buy software and hardware. And so that's a problem internally for us, and I imagine most agencies. I've been very fortunate in that sense, and my department has a very strong narcotics unit. We've been able to use forfeiture monies to go out and buy some of the equipment that I need to do these exams. And I'm hoping to use forfeiture funds to buy the reader that I need so that I can perform more of the chip-offs than what I can do currently.
Do you have any suggestions as far as any listservs or online resources that are go-to help for you that you would suggest to any agencies or people who have one or two classes under their belt and then they're expected to step up and be the new cell phone guru in their agencies and they haven't technically had all the training that they need, but they're the one with the most at the time?
Sure. Websites that I like are the ones that maybe other examiners are doing the same thing I'm doing. So the Mobile Forensic Central, I know that one's discussed quite a bit in different classes. I find that is a real help for me because as other examiners have success with a phone, they'll report it on the site and say, here's the 2 or 3 tools I tried. These didn't work very well, but this one did. And this is what I got using this tool. And they'll list it all out there for you. So it saves me time of having to go through on every single phone I get and test all the tools against it because someone else has already done it. And depending for me, if I look at it and someone's done it in the last 3 to 6 months and that's how they did, I trust that one. If I'm looking there and I see nobody's really reported anything on this phone in the last 2 years, now I'm going to have to run through my different tools and see how I can get, because things change drastically in that amount of time. And tools that didn't support the phone, you know, a year ago may do the best job of carving all the information out of it for you. So it does save me some time. Sometimes, you know, I'm no better off because I went to the site. And then in those scenarios where nobody's made a comment in 2 years and I do the phone and I do find something different than what was said 2 years ago, you know, I'll add on and say, here's what I did on this date with this phone. This carrier's the carrier. Other sites such as IASIS, the International Association for Computer Investigative Specialists, their listserv is extensive. And getting on that listserv, you know, you would need to attend some IASIS training to get on the listserv, but questions and answers from those listservs are great to read about. People are sending questions and getting answers, and I learned from that myself. So it's always good for that, for being a listserv, and that's all over the world.
Great. Thank you for those additions. Wade, thank you for your time today. In closing, I'd like to get any final thoughts you have regarding the future of advanced data extraction.
Well, advanced data extraction right now, we're looking at people are going to be using their devices for more things. You're probably going to have tie-ins to the device that will have all your Microsoft Word and Office type accounts tied to it, and it's take your own device to work. So you plug your phone into your workstation, and then you're able to go because you have a license for Office that's attached to you as a user. Maybe the apps are all stored up in the cloud and you have a license with you. We're seeing cell phones being used to pay for purchases. Basically, everything's tying into cell phones. Most of the computer companies are very concerned about this, that the way everyone thing's going is it's all going to be your cell phone for everything. You'll plug it in. It's going to be smart enough and powerful enough that you can do all your computing. You basically have a monitor at your desk that you plug in and use your cell phone to do all your work for you. It's amazing what that future is and how that's going. The only problem with that, of course, is accessing your apps or stuff when you don't have internet access. If you're traveling and phone's not able to hit a network or something, you would be unable to work. Whereas with a laptop, you don't need the internet access to use your Office, you know, your Excel spreadsheet program. So they got to figure out how they're going to get around that. But it looks like they're trying to put more and more information and more uses into our cell phones since everyone has one practically. Going forward, cell phones are going to be more important as a investigative tool, I think, than they are now. And that's why they're so worried about locking them down better, especially like with Android and iPhone both announced recently that they're not going to be able to get into their phones for law enforcement either, that they're changing the software and it's going to be encrypted and they won't have a way in to get information from a phone even with a court order. And so those are going to be harder and harder things to get around. There are some suggestions and discussions on that both at a federal level, and we're going to wait and see how that fight shakes out. I just don't see it where people are going to be allowed to have a device that they can't get into, just even for national security reasons or for reasons such as having a court order and needing to get into the device for whatever case you're working on. I'm just not sure what direction that's going to end up with, but that's a fight that's being fought right now.
Absolutely. That is a hot-button topic throughout many industries, I think, and that's one that we're going to probably have to sit and wait and see what happens and then act accordingly once it all comes out. Wade, thank you again for your time today. If anybody has some questions for you, can you provide some contact information that they can get in touch with you?
Sure. I prefer email. I'll give you my work email. It's higgasonw. At Michigan, spelled all the way out, .gov, G-O-V.
Great. Thank you for your expertise and your time.
Thank you for taking the time to join us for this conversation. This project was supported by Cooperative Agreement number 2009-BEBX-K030 with the Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance. Points of view or opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guest and moderators and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. From all of us here at Search, thank you for listening to this podcast. We hope you will join us again for another edition of Search's High Tech Crime Podcast Series.